Okay, my name is Melanie. I'm a compulsive eater. I am from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I announced that earlier. And if we could just go through the Serenity Prayer again, this has kind of been a topsy-turvy beginning for me in a meeting. I've never gone through this before in a Zoom meeting. So I've had something like this happen on a phone meeting, but not in a Zoom meeting. So this would just calm me down. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Words to live by. I want to thank you for inviting me to speak. I think you could say that I have practiced many forms of our disease throughout my life. I started early. I have compulsively overate to the point of being morbidly obese. I've restricted food consumption, and until I got very, very thin, I have gone on 10-year spans of yo-yo dieting. And when it was all said and done, none of these were able to help me cope with the life I was living. And in fact, they almost destroyed the life that I had. I was overweight from the time I started school at 5. I began dieting around age 14 and was on some weight loss scheme until about the age of 37 when I came into OA. My top weight is 320 pounds, which I reached in my early 20s. I had doubled my weight in a year following a trauma in my life. 5 years later, I lost one half of my body weight through restrictive dieting and exercise. And I spent the next 10 years practicing bulimia and overeating and compulsive exercising to the tune of 75 pound fluctuations in my weight up and down every 9 months. By the end of the 10 years, I was a chain smoker, binge drinker, workaholic, but food was what really obsessed me. The other things were the substitutes when I did not want to go to food. My body, my mind, and my spirit was breaking down, and I was facing a crisis. The year before I came into OA, I hit my bottom, and I always call it a low bottom. I had gotten married a couple of years before. I'd been promoted to my dream job. I had moved. I should have been so happy, and instead, I was miserable, angry, hopeless, and suicidal. I did not realize that living with someone, my husband, would actually affect my eating. Because I did not eat in public. And that's pretty hard to do when you're newly married. After 3 years of marriage, I could see no solution to my continuing weight gains. I was out of control. The people around me were shocked at my craziness, my weight gains and losses. When no one saw me eating, they couldn't figure out, oh, how could you gain 50 or 70 pounds? And I didn't know where to turn. My intellect had failed me. I had nothing else. Someone steered me into OA. And in May of 1990, about 6 months after the actual steering event that I had been given, I attended my first OA meeting. And when I came into the rooms, in my first OA meeting, it was the basement of a church. I was an angry, sullen, overweight woman wearing a raincoat in the middle of May. And even in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that's not really appropriate. I was trying to hide what I look like. But really, the sullenness, the anger, they were a camouflage for what was really the problem, which was the despair and fear which I lived with every day. I had lost hope. That first meeting, that I walked into, I felt like I belonged for the first time in my life. These were people who knew what it was like to be me. When I heard our invitation to you and I heard them say, "Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, welcome home," I felt it in my heart. 33 and a half years later, whenever we read that in meetings, it's still, I hear it in my heart. And on that day, I think my heart started to thaw. I got abstinent within the first 3 or 4 months of joining OA. My first sponsor chose me instead of me choosing her. And I always tell people she was a kindergarten teacher. And I think she saw a lot of traits in me that she saw every day in her classroom. So I think she felt comfortable that she could work with me. And luckily, I had someone who could tell me how to make a half a cup of rice, how to make a half a cup of oatmeal. I did not cook. I ate junk food. I was a junk food junkie. So she was starting at the beginning with me. I did what I was told, though. I got a sponsor. I got a food plan. I went to 3 meetings a week. I made 3 phone calls a day, plus called my sponsor every day. I did service and I sponsored up to the level of my experience. I was encouraged to be active in my home group, then at the intergroup level, and at the region. I spoke at meetings, marathons, conventions, whenever I was asked. I was told never turn down a service opportunity. My marriage improved. My behavior on the job improved so incredibly when I took my steps and my traditions to work. And in fact, my coworkers didn't know. I think in a lot of meetings, they wanted to say, what did you do with Melanie and where did she go? I think they were happy to have me, but it was incredible to them that I had made that turnaround. My emotional, spiritual, and physical health all improved. My relationships were starting to heal. How great God had been to me. But my story of recovery is also a story of relapse. After being in the program for 7 or 8 years, I relapsed very publicly, gaining about 70 pounds pretty quickly. Life came to call on my Cinderella recovery. I had some severe health problems. My mother-in-law became ill and needed our attention. And I was also blessed with 3 step-grandbabies within 5 years. As robust as I felt my program was, I had not put together a daily practice that allowed me to deal with life as it came at me. Instead of working my program and turning to my higher power, I stepped outside the bounds of my food plan for comfort and control that I wanted. Well, that first compulsive bite began a 3 to 4 year journey of on again, off again abstinence. As embarrassed as I was at this huge failure that I had had, I knew there were no answers to my problems and the food outside of the rooms. So I needed to put myself in a place to learn the new lessons God had for me. And I always read from the For Today, December 26th, on page 361. Vitality shows in not only the ability to persist, but in the ability to start over. And that's from F. Scott Fitzgerald. What injustice to think myself a failure because I have to begin again. So I slipped or relapsed. So what? Starting over is what all creation is about. It is a part of the fabric of success in enterprises ranging from spinning a web to splitting the atom. Willingness to make a new beginning is a sign of growth. It means I am returning to the program with a deeper understanding of myself and my illness. Far from wanting to hide in the back of the room, I feel I have something of value to contribute. The big book tells me that nothing works better than getting out and working with others. One way to do that is to share my discovery that relapse, which for me is the only alternative to the OA program, has renewed my faith in the program. For today, I think of the term retread as proof of how wonderfully accepting and free we OAs can be about the nature of our disease. If there was no Overeaters Anonymous, I might have to give in to the gloom and doom, but OA is alive and well and going strong, and so am I. I don't like the term retread. I'm not going to rewrite this whole piece to take it out, but many of us are recycling through because of relapse. And I think oftentimes we feel there's a stigma to that, and we feel we can't talk about it at meetings. And that kept me on that 3 to 4 year treadmill of not being able to find a firm footing, because I was embarrassed to tell people, even though it was very obvious, just like the raincoat situation. It's very obvious when you gain 70 pounds and people see you 2 and 3 times a week. They know you've gained 70 pounds. Over the years, I learned that language, how I talk to myself and others, is important. Words of shame are some of the most damaging words I can say to myself. Shame keeps me in the disease. I thought because I had made a mistake or a bad decision or a wrong choice, I didn't deserve recovery. This is the lie of the disease. All program and reality and really life is about learning and changing and growing. I wish I had not made the choice that I had that day and subsequent days, because it put a barrier between me and God. When I was ready to trust the God I had come to know, I was able to maintain my abstinence again. I had a second relapse about 10 years after the first relapse. So we're into about my 18th year. And this is where I learned, most of you, if you have been in program any length of time, have heard HALT: hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Well, I've kind of modified that and made it FALTS, P-H-A-L-T-S. And that stands for pain, hunger, anger, loneliness, tired, and sickness. And that pain and sickness for me, I found out, were huge, huge triggers. There is a lot of shame still in me. I'm getting a cold right now. And even the common cold can lay me low with shame. I went through another time of great change in my life. Again, illness, the illness of people close to me, multiple members of my family dying within a short period of time. I couldn't seem to keep up with the fatigue and the stress cocktail that was my life. Instead of slowing down and allowing God to show me the way daily, I decided to take control back, pushing myself harder and harder to find solutions and to run from all the pain and emotional turmoil. Again, I turned to food for comfort and relief that I could have gotten for God, from God and from the fellowship, with a lot less pain and emotional anguish. Through both of these relapses, I continued to attend meetings, do service, lead meetings, but I was struggling to share honestly about my feelings, because I was burying them in the food. The pandemic exacerbated all of this. I was depressed, feeling lost, like all of us. But again, I did not share. In September of last year, I attended a relapse and recovery workshop and began working on the 30 questions from Are You Slipping and Sliding? I got a new sponsor and began to work the whole program, not just the parts that I found convenient. I developed an action plan that includes doing the steps every day, using all of the tools, doing steps 10 and 11, writing about what is going on in my life and sharing it honestly. I have a food plan and I rate my food daily. More importantly, I have made a commitment to share openly and honestly what is happening in my life and accepting the compassion and love given to me. As I wrote through these 30 questions, it was clear that I had not developed a program framework to deal with life on life's terms. I did the steps, but only the tools and service that I felt comfortable with and that I liked to do. I was not consistent in my practice of all parts of my program. Now I was doing it on a daily basis, only when I felt like it and having a good day. I would say I hate repetition in any form, but it is the repetition of working the tools, doing my prayers and meditation daily, reaching out to others, no matter how I feel, that prepare me for the valleys of life. Today I have a sponsor and I talk to that sponsor. I am back to being a sponsor. I have a daily plan of my OA tasks. The plan is there for every day. There's no figuring out what I need to do today. It is especially important that I reach out to my higher power. I still want to get in front of him and control everything, but he reminds me to let go and let God. I will leave you with this. Get a sponsor, whether you want one or not, and use that sponsor. Think of gratitude all day, every day. It is the antidote to restless, irritable, and discontent, and anything else that might ail you. And it takes time to develop that practice of feeling the gratitude. You may be making up the gratitude for several weeks until you start to feel, oh yeah, there's the sun out there. And believe me, in Western Pennsylvania, we are so glad when we get a sunny day. Life in the 12 steps are about self-examination and learning from our mistakes. Drop the shame and the blame and keep coming back. Put down the food, pick up the steps and the tools. When all else fails, keep coming back to meetings and begin again, thanking our higher power that there are meetings available. Our program is about learning to love God, ourselves, and each other. We need to love where we are and not where we think we ought to be. For the smart ones in the group, from the ages and dates I've given you, you may probably have guessed I'm going to be 71 in January. You might not have got that specific with it, but you'd know I was close to 70. I'm so grateful that by some miracle I have stayed when things were great, but most especially, I'm very grateful that I stayed when things were bad. I'm grateful for the members who came weekly to my first meeting so that when I was ready, there was a meeting available to me and I was welcome there. Over 33 and a half years, I've gained many mothers, sisters, brothers, friends who have loved me at my best, but especially at my worst. My recovery has been a journey physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Whenever I have faced a challenge, God has provided someone in these rooms to guide me through to the answer on the other side. I'm grateful for the several loving and patient and gentle people who stepped up to sponsor me. I was not always an easy person to sponsor. I've attended thousands of meetings, made tens of thousands of phone calls, and I am so grateful for every one of them. I am grateful to know that my higher power loves me and accepts me. Thank you for allowing me to share my story with you today.